call the first case for today, 12-8-P-667, Brian Casey versus Ronald Smith, representing Acceptance Casualty Insurance Company, is Attorney Charles Noel. And counsel, you may proceed.
Good morning. My name is Charlie Noel. I'm the attorney here on behalf of the defendant, appellant, petitioner, Acceptance Casualty Insurance Company. There was only one reason that John Zeverino was driving his tractor on February 27, 2009, when this accident occurred, and that was to repair or replace the grill and the oil filler tube that was on his tractor. And there's two portions of very crucial, undisputed testimony that the court needs to be very well aware of. They come from the deposition of Mr. Zeverino, where he was asked, "So at the time the accident occurred, you were driving your tractor en route to getting the maintenance and repair work done on it, correct?" He answered, "I was getting repair work done on the tractor. To me, that was not a routine maintenance, but it was repair that they had broken, they had to replace." What he was referring to there was Fabco, where he was going, had earlier broken his grill when they were doing other work for him. And then he was asked, "Right, but you needed to get it repaired?" And here's his answer. "Oh, yes, I needed to get it repaired because it was already starting to fall apart and fall off on the highway." He was then asked, "And so you needed to have that done in order to have your tractor the way you needed it to?" And he interjected, "Yes, sir." And then he was asked, "The way you needed it to operate as an owner-operator for Taylor Truckline?" And his answer was, "Correct." The other important, very important testimony of Mr. Zeverino is the following. "You testified that you could have taken a load on the day that the accident occurred without having service done that very day on the grill or without being serviced that day on your oil filler tube." And the question continued, "Eventually, you were going to have to get that repaired to be able to continue to do business, correct?" And he answered, "Correct, no. I'd have to get it repaired to have the truck right." And then he went on to say, "But DOT clarified that I did not have to be out of service. I could have taken a load that day if I needed to." And then he was asked, "But this was something that was part of the ongoing maintenance," he interjected, "right?" And then he was asked, "Of your tractor so that it would perform for you?" And he said, "Correct." The opinion of the Court of Appeals pretty much disregards and ignores that crucial testimony.
Mr. Noel, let me ask you, can we look at just the two insurance policies here, or do we have to look at the lease? Does the lease become something that's very important in making an ultimate determination in this case?
I think we need to look at the lease agreement that Taylor drafted and that Zeverino was obligated to follow, in addition to the insurance policies. One of the cases that is cited by respondent in their brief is a really excellent case, I believe, in explaining how the courts, what they have to do when they're facing these kinds of questions. And that case is Occidental Fire and Casualty Company versus Suchinski. It's from the United States District Court, District of Minnesota. It's about a year old. It came down January 8th, 2013. That you can find that in Great West's appendix, pages 12 through 26. What that case involved was a wrongful death case in the underlying action. The case in Occidental versus Suchinski was a coverage question on a declaratory judgment action that Occidental brought against Suchinski. Now, the facts here are somewhat different than ours, and I think this is going to show you why you have to look at the lease and you have to look at all the facts here. In this case, Hip was the driver. Tom Hip was the driver. It's also a case that's very familiar to both myself and Ms. Novotny. I defended Hip in the underlying action. Her office defended the carrier, Airline Transportation Service. Hip had a non-exclusive contract in that case with Airline Transportation Service. Here, we have an exclusive contract. Severino was prohibited from working for anyone else. Hip was not. On the date of the accident in the Sochinski case, Hip had been running errands. He had two errands to complete. First, he went from his home to Twin City Mack Volvo, a truck dealership and repair place, to have a clean idle software installed into the tractor. After that was done, he left that place and went to another place called Blaine Brothers, where he was going to pick up some outriggers. And I'll explain what these things do in a moment here. When he got to Blaine, the outriggers weren't ready. So he then went home, had lunch. Then he goes back to Blaine Brothers after lunch, and he has the accident on the way home. The clean idle software, the testimony is and was from Mr. Hip that was for his own convenience. It wasn't necessary for the carrier, Airline Transportation Services. What it did is it allowed him to keep his truck idling without having to shut it down in certain states where they have environmental regulations that you cannot leave the tractor idling unless you have this software. The outriggers are things that were used to haul something called wind tower parts. The carrier in that case, Airline Transportation Services, didn't haul these things. So the outriggers he was getting were to haul freight that Airline Transportation Services did not haul. What Mr. Hip testified to was it would make the trailer more marketable to other carriers or to use himself if he quit working for Airline Transportation Service. The owner of Airline Transportation Service testified that equipment, the outriggers, were not necessary for him to continue working with ATS. In fact, the facts in this case show when his deposition was taken 3 years later, the outriggers have still yet never been used on anything he did for Airline Transportation Service.
How does that case help us with this case?
One of the things the court looks at then, once it goes through the factual analysis, one of the things they say is they had a similar exclusion to this. There was an exclusion from coverage on the non-trucking liability policy if HIP was acting for or on behalf of ATS. And what the court said in that case is you have to look to the terms of the lease. You have to look at those facts to get the whole picture. And that's one thing that I think one reason we're here today is, as I read, with all due respect to Court of Appeals, is I read their decision. They ignore many of the crucial facts that are involved in this case. And as a result of that, we get a decision that isn't consistent with what the undisputed facts are.
Well, let's just look at the Court of Appeals for a moment. They look to some federal cases, Seventh Circuit, and they say that the rule of law, as I understand the Court of Appeals, the rule of law is that every trip for the purpose of repair is not in the business of the lessor. That instead, the rule of law is repairs must further the lessee's commercial interests by allowing the owner-operator to continue using the trailer in the lessee's business. If the owner-operator could have continued hauling loads for the lessee without obtaining the repairs, then the repairs did not further the lessee's commercial interests. That's what I read their test. Do you agree that that's their test? Okay.
Yes, I do, Your Honor.
And their test on furthering commercial lessees' commercial interests comes from the language of the policies. Okay. So your position is that's swell, that's the test. But that you cannot determine what furthers the lessee's commercial interest unless you look at the lease. Because in the lease, the lessor and lessee have made a determination of what they view as furthering the commercial interest.
That's
your position.
I totally agree with that.
And then, if I understand it, your position is the lease says maintain the truck, right?
Pardon me, I didn't hear you, Your Honor.
Pardon me?
I didn't hear you.
What does the lease say? What language in the lease are you relying on?
I'm sorry, I did not hear you.
Because I can't talk, that's the problem. What provision in the lease are you relying on that indicates this repair was for the lessee's commercial interests?
The provisions of the lease that require the driver and the tractor owner, John Zeverino, to see that all the equipment is, you find the actual language.
The actual language.
The lease provides that he has the obligation to make sure that the tractor is in the kind of operating condition that it needs to be in order to comply with all the rules and regulations. The Code of Federal Regulations has a couple provisions that apply right to that. One of them is 49 CFR 396.3A requires that parts and accessories shall be in safe and proper operating condition at all times. And I don't think it can reasonably be held that when this guy's grill is starting to fall apart and fall off on the highway, that's a safe and proper operating condition. And the lease drafted, not by Zeverino, but by Taylor, required that Zeverino do that, and that's what he was on his way to doing. Also, 49 CFR 396.7A prohibits operating a vehicle in such a condition as to likely cause an accident or a breakdown of the vehicle. And again, when you've got the grill of the tractor starting to fall apart, fall off on the highway, I don't know how you could conclude that may not likely cause an accident or a breakdown.
Counsel, it seems to me there is what I will call a temporal element to this case. Timing comes to mind. This case is before us on summary judgment. The test that the chief read, utilized by the Court of Appeals, the Seventh Circuit case, Ehlers case, talks about repairs must further the lessee's commercial interest by allowing the owner-operator to continue using the trailer in the lessee's business. If the owner-operator could have continued hauling loads, okay, I'm emphasizing, could have continued hauling loads. The Court of Appeals cites to the Hartford case for elucidating that test, and it says, if the repair is necessary to allow the company leasing the truck to continue, again, I emphasize that, using the truck in its business. Seems to me there's an argument that summary judgment is not appropriate here because there's a genuine issue of material fact as to if the repair is necessary to allow the company leasing the truck to continue using it. It also appears to me, arguably, that the facts are, in the immediate sense, this is where temporal comes in the immediate sense, they could continue using it, but what about the future? So is there a genuine issue of material fact? Does continue mean today or tomorrow, or does it mean next month? Can you respond to that, please?
Sure, I can respond to that, Your Honor. Thank you for the question. There is a case, and I can't recall the name of it right off the top of my head, but it's cited in our brief, that says it doesn't need to be done today or tomorrow, as long as it has to be done in the future. And as far as whether or not there's a question of fact, if you probably picked up on the procedural history on this case from reading the briefs, but initially the circuit court judge did just that. He denied both parties' motion for summary judgment. We both parties agreed that there is not any question of fact. None of these facts are in dispute, so there's really nothing for a jury to decide here. And so then he reconsidered and granted the motion of Great West and denied our motion. So there really isn't a difference in what the facts are.
What is meant by continued use, and do the facts here, how do the facts here meet that definition of continued use? What's meant by continued use?
Well, I think that's why we're before this court. Because what it really is here, I think, on this set of facts, it's a policy question, a public policy question. Should the public policy be that when your grill is starting to fall apart and fall off on the highway, and you have a lease that requires you to get those repairs made, if you can still haul a load, but it's in that condition, that's what we should be doing? You know, I thought of this a lot. I drove down from Minneapolis yesterday. There's hundreds of tractor tailors driving along 94. I drove behind some, in front of some, past some, were passed by some, and I'm very thankful that none of those had their grills starting to fall apart and fall off on the highway, because who knows what could happen. And I think that's why this is a very important case for the Supreme Court, because it is going to set a very important public policy and important precedent here.
Paragraph 27 of the Court of Appeals says, and this relates to Justice Bradley's point about summary judgment. Paragraph 27 says that you argue that Zavarino was in the business of Taylor when he got the repairs, because the lease agreement imposed a contractual duty to maintain the tractor in a state of repair required by all applicable regulations. You made the same argument today. And then a reference to 49 CFR, which requires that all parts and accessories shall be in safe and proper operating condition at all times. And 396.7a, which prohibits operation of a vehicle in such condition as is likely to cause an accident or breakdown of the vehicle. And, you know, anytime you follow a vehicle or near a vehicle which has something that can fall off it, the danger of an accident is very high. So I understand your point about the grill, but the bottom line of the Court of Appeals was that there was no evidence that the Zavarino needed to have the grill and oil filler to repair to comply with these regulations. So as a matter of summary judgment, there was nothing in here that raised your point. Is that right?
Well, I think if I understand your question correctly,
the Court of Appeals held against you on that, saying you didn't have anything in the record on summary judgment to show that this was in an unsafe, potentially unsafe condition in violation of the regulations. Therefore, we don't have to deal with it.
And that's where I think the Court of Appeals is dead wrong, when you've got this grill starting to fall apart and fall off on the highway. To say there is no evidence in the record, that evidence is clearly in the record. It came right from the guy who was driving the tractor at the time of the accident. And that's clearly in the record, but it was totally ignored and disregarded by the Court of Appeals.
As I understand it, Mr. Severino, what took his truck to FAMCO to get some sort of repair, and it was at the time that it was at FAMCO that the grill was damaged. Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor. It was in January. This accident, I think, was February 27th. And was, I believe, towards the end of January. And in the appendix, there are the repair orders from FABCO when it was initially in, and also, I believe, the one when they did the repairs on this day after he got down there. And what happened is they were doing some radiator repairs and some other work on his tractor back in January, and as they were doing that, I think it was like a sawhorse or something, hit the grill and damaged the grill. FABCO said, our mistake, we'll take care of it for you, and we'll let you know when we get a new grill, you come in, we'll put it on. And then with respect to the oil filter, Zeverino testified that the oil filter, or filler tube, excuse me, where you pour the oil into the engine, had broken off from the block area, I believe. And so he needed a new oil filler tube. So he also ordered that. He was going to take that home and put it on himself. FABCO volunteered to, as long as we're going to fix the grill for you, we'll take care of the oil filler tube too. So that's what he was on his way to do.
What the import of my question is this. If the initial visit to FABCO was in January, and the follow-up visit to FABCO was on February 27th, then there is a minimum of 27 days between the time that the grill was damaged and the time of the accident. What is the significance of that for this case?
Sure, I think that is of significance. I surely don't think the grill was getting any better. It was probably getting worse as time went on, and to the point where when Mr. Zeverino testifies, he says it was starting to fall apart and fall off on the highway. I suspect that wasn't true back in January.
Is that in the record?
Pardon me?
Your suspicion was, is that in the record?
It's not in the record, and I was just trying to respond to your question, what I thought the significance of that was, and that's my take on what the significance of that was.
And that's a reasonable inference you're making, you say.
Yeah, I thought Justice Prosser's focus was more on, were the repairs that were done in January more significant to the functioning of the tractor than the grill was?
I don't believe so. When he, and that is also in John Zeverino's deposition. I don't have the site for it right now, but if you look in his deposition, what he was going in was to have done was a radiator and an engine control module, an ECM. And he said he could have continued operating at that time with the engine control module in the shape it was in. It just needed to get something like a tune-up.
Counsel, is there a rule of law that you expect to have come out of this case? Or is this just fact-specific to this one case? Generally, we take cases because they're of statewide significance.
The I guess that's a very good question, and I never really thought about, is there a rule of law that will come out? I would imagine there will be, because it's coming from the Supreme Court.
But is it for this case only? These facts dictate this result, or is it something that other people will be able to use and go forward and be helpful to them in figuring this out? Or is it always going to be, what does the lease in this one case say? What are the facts involving this one grill? If the grill is falling off, then here's your rule of law. What is it you expect?
I think there definitely is a situation where this case will apply to a lot of other situations. And what the rule of law would be is that when you have, when you're an owner-operator and you're on a permanent exclusive lease to a motor carrier, and the motor carrier's lease requires you to maintain it in proper operating order, to maintain it consistent with the federal regulations, whatever you have to do that is not going to be covered by a non-trucking liability insurance policy, which only covers situations like if you're going to a movie, if you're, you know, I give a number of them in our brief. If you're going to a movie, you're giving a friend a ride home, you're out for a night on the town.
That almost sounds like any time you go in for repairs.
Pardon me?
Then there would be coverage, any repair.
I'm sorry, I still didn't hear you.
That almost sounds like any time you go in for any repair.
No,
that would be
and
in
that's,
the business.
That's why the I see my red light is on.
May respond. You should respond.
Okay. That's what the Suchinski case points out. He was going to get repairs and maintenance things, but they were not items that had anything to do with his work for Airline Transportation Services. He was going to pick up these outriggers, hoping to be able to find work with another carrier, and he didn't have an exclusive lease. So I think that there are definitely situations where the non-trucking liability would apply, even if you're going to get some repairs, but not in this case.
Well, let me...
Thank you.
No, I'm going to try and summarize what I think you would write in this opinion. Okay? And then you can think about that and tell us when you come back whether that's correct. One, the test that the Court of Appeals set forth generally is correct. If the owner-operator could have continued hauling loads without obtaining the repairs, repairs didn't further the lessee's commercial interests. You determine the lessee's, that's the first step. You determine the lessee's commercial interest by looking at the lease.
You look at the entire factual situation, definitely including the lease.
That's right. See what the obligations of the parties were under the lease.
That's correct.
Third, you look at the obligations of the owner-operator under the federal regulations, which impose requirements, because you assume that the federal regulations are in further of the lessee's commercial interests and public safety, and that would be required under public policy. So those are the tests. And then the Court of Appeals falls down because it stopped at number one. It stopped at just looking in the abstract of or its own factual view as to whether this is in the commercial interest, not at the lease, and it was wrong about the federal regulations in terms of the fact situation.
That's correct.
That is a summary of your position and how you think this opinion should be written.
Mm-hmm. Yes, correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Novotny, is that your pronunciation representing Great West Casualty Company? We should point out that that the insureds have been paid. It's just a question of fighting which insurance company should make the payments.
Correct, Your Honor. And again, just for the record, my name is Tamara Novotny, and I'm representing Great West Casualty Company, the trucking or business use insurer. I would like to begin with by noting the Hartford versus Occidental case, and that is the Seventh Circuit case that you made reference to before as basically setting forth the applicable standard as to what is meant by in the business of. And again, the court defined it as occasions when the truck is being used to further the commercial interests of the lessee. So obviously the question that this court has to address is whether the repairs that Mr. Zavarino was going to have made at Fabco on his day off were going to further the commercial interests of Taylor Truck Line. Now, I think it is critical to recognize that in the Hartford case and in all of the other cases cited in the briefs talking about repair or maintenance, in none of those cases did the court simply say, are repairs being done? If so, that ends the analysis and we can move on. In every one of those cases, the courts looked at the nature of the repair or maintenance work. And more specifically, they looked, as the Court of Appeals did, to see was that repair or maintenance work needed in order to keep the vehicle operational, so that the vehicle could either complete an existing dispatch or it would be ready to accept a future dispatch for the carrier. In Hartford, for example, the issue was a Freon valve that needed to be repaired. And in finding that that repair was in furtherance of the carrier's interests, the court talked about, among other things, that this driver had to stop along the way in order to replenish the Freon. And I think more significantly, that despite those efforts, the customer also ultimately rejected the cargo of frozen concentrate because it was too warm. There you see a very direct correlation between the need for this repair and the carrier's commercial interest when loads are getting rejected. That's similar to the Great West versus Carolina Casualty case out of Minnesota that is cited and discussed in the materials.
So what is the rule of law you would like to see come out of this case?
I think I agree with the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals that they have expressed the rule of law, which is essentially it has to be furthering the commercial interests of the carrier. And when you're talking about repairs and maintenance, are those repairs or maintenance necessary in order to keep the vehicle operational, or were those repairs somehow ordered or directed by the carrier?
Counselor, does it further the commercial interests of the carrier to have the tractor look good and that doesn't have pieces of the grill missing or something else like a mirror hanging at half mast? Does that further the interests of a carrier?
I guess there's nothing in the record. My initial response would be probably not.
Does Taylor have its name on Mr. Zervino's truck?
It would have to be under the regulations.
Right.
It would have to have their name on it.
Okay,
on the
so
truck.
If you have a truck cab and the grill is falling off and some other things that don't interfere with delivering the load but really look kind of shoddy, doesn't that have an effect on the commercial interests of the carrier?
My response is, again, it's hard to answer because I think every customer is going to be looking at different things.
Well, it affects your test because you want the test to focus on whether he could actually haul something. I'm asking you, couldn't that test be broader and really affect how the truck bears upon the reputation of the person whose name is splashed on the side of it?
Well, and I did also indicate that the test could also include if the carrier had ordered repairs or maintenance or some other task to be completed. So I think in that scenario, if Taylor Truck Line had asked Mr. Zervino to go to Fabco and get the grill repaired because they have determined that it does have some impact on their business, I would agree that that would be in the business of. But when a driver just decides on his own that he's going to get this repair made because, in his words, he wants to, quote, make the tractor right, and it is not required under the regulations, I think imposing liability in that scenario is really going beyond.
Well, let's just take. Depends on how broadly you interpret the word maintain, which he has an obligation to do under the lease, correct?
Well, he has an obligation to maintain the tractor in accordance with the rules and regulations.
He also has a contractual obligation. It says to repair and maintain it. That's under Section 8C of the lease.
Correct. But I think the lease, if you read it, in total, it's very clear, and I think it's consistent with a lot of the cases, almost every one of the cases, where the obligation is to maintain it in accordance with the rules and regulations.
He obviously has that obligation, too. All I'm saying to you is his obligation to maintain it limited by what the regulations require? I understand at the accident, they looked at the truck, and it was written up saying there weren't any violations to the truck. At least that was my recollection of what was in the briefs and the appendix. You still haven't answered my question.
Right.
Yeah, just let me finish up, and then I'll get out of your way. You're saying that you would interpret maintain the truck only with regard to the rules, that it doesn't go any further than that. That's what I want to know. Is that your position?
Unless there is an explicit order from the carrier,
okay.
I think, where they would
to
want
go ahead
some,
and, mm-hmm.
to do something above and beyond what is in the regulations.
Okay.
And I think that makes sense when, obviously, the carrier's interest is keeping this vehicle on the road.
Sure.
And if there's no violations and there's, an inspection report indicating that there's no hazards or operational issues with this vehicle, so carry on.
Okay. Okay, so it's either to comply with a statute or regulation or to comply with the directive of the carrier. That's the breadth of maintenance under the lease.
I believe so.
Okay, good. That's fair. Thank you.
Well, and I would say not necessarily under the lease, but I would say under the authorities as well.
Okay. All right. That falls under in the commercial interests.
Correct.
That's what you're doing.
Right.
Okay. Thank you. Justice Bradley.
Thank you, Chief. With regard to this maintenance issue, that comes under the exclusion in 14A, as I understand it. That is, when I say the exclusion in 14A, let me be more specific. That is...
reading from the acceptance policy.
I'm reading from the acceptance policy, Appendix 88, trucking, 14A. While being operated, maintained, or used to carry property in any business or en route to or from such business purpose. That's what I'm reading. The Court of Appeals indicates in its discussion of its maintenance under Exclusion 14A that the maintenance argument of your opponent is too broad. In fact, the Court of Appeals uses rather strong language that it would I'm referring to paragraph 32 of the Court of Appeals opinion. The maintenance argument would be, the Court of Appeals says, illogical. The Court of Appeals says it would render absurd results. And why? They say in paragraph 32, because under acceptance interpretation, the mere operation of the tractor for any reason would be a business purpose. You have the sign of the company on or something. Consequently, the non-trucking use policy would never provide coverage for claims that arose when the tractor was being driven. Clearly, such a broad interpretation of the exclusion is illogical. Aren't they, let me ask, is the Court of Appeals overstating a bit in paragraph 32?
No, I don't believe they are.
Why not?
But let me I just want to make sure that we're clear here. The conversation and the discussion we've had about the furthering commercial interest standard, I believe, is most applicable to acceptance's exclusion 14B in this.
In the business of. Yes, there are three issues, as I understand, in this case. And in the business of deals with one issue that we've been dealing with, but maintenance is implicated in the 14, I'll call A exclusion.
There is certainly some overlap with regard to maintenance. Here's why I think the Court of Appeals was absolutely correct in its analysis. What acceptance is arguing with regard to 14A is essentially that each of the activities that are listed in 14A are in and of itself a separate business purpose. So what it is arguing is that operation of this vehicle is a business purpose. Maintenance is a business purpose. Use is a business purpose. Sometimes they say it's using to carry property is a maintenance purpose. And anytime you're going en route to any of those activities, that too falls within the exclusion. And then they can take it a step further and say, if you're doing these activities for Zevarino or for a motor carrier, That's all going to be excluded under this provision. What is left? And I would also say if operation or use, including for Taylor, is excluded under 14A, when would 14B ever be needed or applicable? And it's also inconsistent. Acceptance's arguments are also inconsistent. Acceptance acknowledges that some operation of this tractor would be a non-business purpose. For example, if Mr. Zavarino had been driving to the movies, acceptance concedes that that operation of the vehicle would be a non-business use. So it suggests that there has to be something more than merely operation as the business use. And if you follow that through to the remainder of this exclusion, that suggests that something more than simply maintenance is the business use. In an attempt to find some reasonable way to read 14A, what Great West has argued to the courts below is that carrying property is actually the business purpose that 14A is talking about. And so those other activities, whether it's operation, maintenance, or use, somehow have to be connected to the business purpose of carrying property. And that really makes sense when you think about the fact that trucking, that is the business. It's transporting cargo. It's also an interpretation that's generally consistent with a lot of non-trucking use policy exclusions, including that in the acceptance versus Cantor decision.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, ultimately, I think, you know, even if you look at acceptance's briefing throughout this case on this particular exclusion, sort of varied in terms of how they read it and what they pick out and highlight. Certainly, if acceptance has some difficulties providing a consistent interpretation of 14A, I think there's a strong argument that it's at the very least ambiguous and would have to be construed against acceptance.
Well, you have to read 32 with 31. And the argument that the Court of Appeals sets up, which may or may not be accurate as to what acceptance was arguing, was, okay, maybe the repair was in the operation of the business, but driving to the repair company was not.
And I'm sorry, I didn't follow your question.
Well, they were arguing that acceptance contends there's no coverage because the accident occurred while Zavarino was on his way to have the tractor maintained. And being on the way to have it maintained is not covered, even if the repair is an essential to the business. I mean, that's what the Court of Appeals sets up as the argument and then says, well, that's just absurd.
Well, and I think where the Court of Appeals is coming from, again, because acceptance's argument is when you look at 14A, maintenance is a business purpose, and then the exclusion goes on to say, or traveling en route to any
that's
of those
right.
business purposes.
That's right. And then knocking down the traveling en route argument here.
I would read the Court of Appeals, or at least I would say the appropriate interpretation would be that it's not only in route, but it would also cover the actual act itself.
Well, you know, let's look at the broader issue that Justice Rogenczyk raises about that it may not be a safety hazard if the tractor is in bad, doesn't look good. So let's say instead of repairing a grill, the paint job is not good. It's scratched, mauled, whatever. So it looks sloppy and dirty, but absolutely perfect working condition. And I'm assuming that the regulations, the federal regulations, don't say anything about paint jobs other than that they were a safety hazard. And this is not a safety hazard. So, now it doesn't cast good vibes publicly. That if there's a paint job and they're up there, if this is a drive to get a paint job or drive out of the paint job, I assume you would think you're not liable. Is that right?
Correct. And actually, Your Honor, at the summary judgment stage, that is one of the arguments I made, is that a scratch would not be in the business of, and of course, we also believe that the repairs in this case were not in the business of Taylor Truck Line. You know, I would agree if there was something in the record to suggest that, you know, the appearance of this vehicle was in such a state that customers were refusing to contact Taylor Truck Line, that there would be some evidence of a commercial impact on Taylor Truck Line.
There's nothing in this.
We don't have anything in the record to suggest that. And, you know, I think it would be far-fetched to suggest that every tractor trailer that is out on the roadway is in a perfectly pristine condition with no scratches and you know, various things within the cab, for example, that we might think are a little bit unsavory.
Hey, it could have been on the way to the car wash if we're dealing with a dirty tractor rather than. But I'm more interested in the test. As I read the Court of Appeals decision, and this may be viewed as a misreading, they said, look, the test is in furtherance of the commercial interest, right? Let's look what happened here. This is a grill. This grill doesn't operate the tractor. This grill satisfied the feds. There's no showing here that this is a safety problem with the grill. Therefore, this repair of the grill was a personal thing with the owner-operator, not in the commercial interest of your client. Is that the way you read it? Because they just don't look at the lease to say, what does a lease say is in the further interest, commercial interest of the owner, of the lessee, I guess it is.
I think the Court of Appeals does, you know, at least indirectly look at the lease agreement. And I think that's where they're talking about the regulations and whether the regulations require this repair and this maintenance work to be done. Because under the lease agreement, again, the repairs or maintenance that has to be done are those that are required.
But even if the lease didn't say anything about the federal regulations, that argument could be made. Namely, it's in the commercial interest of the lessee to follow the federal regs because they all might be held liable.
Correct. The question was asked about how relevant the lease agreement is. It's certainly something that can be looked at, and courts have looked at the lease agreements to see if the driver is fulfilling a contractual obligation. But obviously, coverage determination ultimately has to come down to the language that's included in the insurance policies.
But the lease also sets out what's in the business interest of the lessee and the lessor. They wouldn't have a lease. I mean, that's what the contract is all about, right? You have to tie the lease to the, I understand coverage comes under the policy, but when the policy turns on what is in the business of, and you got a lease that's a business lease, I mean, don't you look at that to help you know what's in the business of?
You absolutely, I agree that you can look at it. I also think you have to look at it in whole. And one of the things that acceptance wants the court to disregard is that section of the lease agreement that explicitly addresses the insurance and the indemnity obligations, where the parties basically decided here's how we're going to allocate and here's how we're going to define certain activities that, you know, Taylor was responsible for trips that the vehicle was making per its direction and where it's transporting cargo and it's being instructed. But other personal trips were going to be deemed a personal or a private activity. And for those particular activities, Zeverino and Bobtail Insurer were obligated to indemnify.
Mm-hmm. So with respect to your test, again, the rule that you would have come out of this, It's that there needs to be either a violation of a regulation or statute or upon explicit request of the carrier. Is that right? Did I say that right?
I don't think you would have to be to the point where you actually have an existing violation. I think
you're reading my mind. I mean, when you can't mean that people have to wait until they've violated the law in order for it to be in furtherance of, right?
Right.
So where down that line do you begin it and end it? And does the request of the carrier have to be something that's pursuant to the contractual obligations between the parties, or can it just be a request?
As the latter, I think really if the carrier is ordering or asking the driver to do something, I think you can imply from that request or that order, whether it's something under the contract or something beyond, that it is something at least the carrier is deeming to be in their own.
They paint my truck.
They're requesting it, and they certainly have a reason, and they must think it's going to be to their benefit to request that you do that. I think a case that maybe sort of gets to that point is the Progressive. I think it's Emil Janovich from Illinois from 2013, where the carriers, they had just leased this particular driver and vehicle onto this company. And it was that company's policy, not because it was required by regulations or anything, but just simply their company policy to have all vehicles inspected before they're allowed to take their first load.
So how close to violation do you have to get before it's something that's required?
Well, if you look at the regulation, it basically states that you're required to be marked out of service, or you would be out of service and in violation if there is a condition about the vehicle that's likely to cause an accident or a breakdown of the vehicle. So I think, I don't know that there's any specific temporal connection, but is it a condition that's likely going to cause an accident or a breakdown?
Well, the pieces of your grill are breaking off, and I'm the car driving behind that semi. I mean, I'm on the road too much, believe me, and I've had ice come off of trucks and hit my windshield. Guess what? I'm buying a new windshield. I mean, I would think a grill would be a similar consequence if it spins off and hits your windshield. Why doesn't that meet your test?
Well, I think, again, you can go to the regulations and you can go to the fact that we have this month that passed, you know, where this vehicle was in this condition. It had never been placed out of service during that time. There was no indication that was creating a hazard, or certainly that it was causing this vehicle to operate incorrectly. And I think most significantly, you have the inspector looking at this vehicle after the accident, conducting a level one inspection, which is the most extensive.
Are you saying there's a factual issue as to whether pieces of it were actually cracking off while it was driving down the freeway? Because that, to me, I got to tell you, I think if the grill of a semi in front of me is cracking off and coming at me while I'm driving, that's a problem. I wouldn't want semis to go down the road like that. So I'm pressing you on this a little bit because I'm trying to figure it out.
I don't think there is a fact issue. I think that is one of the things two insurers did agree with, that there really aren't any fact issues. It's really how you apply those facts to the policy language and to the authorities. And the reason I go back to this inspector is because this is someone who is authorized under the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration to complete these driver vehicle inspection reports. And here it's the most thorough. And among the things that inspector has to be looking at is the condition of the vehicle. He is required under the regulations to mark that vehicle out of service if after his inspection he finds any condition is likely to cause an accident or a breakdown. Now, he's the one with the training and the experience. I certainly am not going to suggest I have it, but he has obviously inspected this vehicle and made the determination that it is not creating a safety issue and that it can proceed along. You know, I think Mr. Zavarino testified that it was starting to fall apart on the highway, I think there's nothing really that says anything beyond that. I mean,
well, is that a fact issue? Is it a fact issue that the grill could have relatively easily come off or could have come off on a bump in the road versus that a month before, or whatever time period it was, the federal inspector said it was in safe condition? Is it a fact issue that now, when I say now, at the time of the accident, the grill was not in a safe condition?
Well, the inspection was done at the time of the accident. So that was the condition of the vehicle that inspector was looking at, was immediately after the accident.
Which accident? The accident in which the grill was damaged?
No, the accident involving...
The accident we're talking about.
The accident involving the plaintiff.
All right. As a matter of law... Here's the difference I hear between you and opposing counsel. Doesn't mean I'm right, but this is what I hear. You accept the Court of Appeals test that the test of the repair is whether it furthers the commercial interest of the lessee. If it furthers the commercial interest of the lessee, it's covered by your policy. If it doesn't, it's covered by the other policy, acceptance, right? That's the best. Hey, to find out what furthers the commercial interest of the lessee, you can look at the lease, but you don't have to. That you can look at the federal regulations, but you don't have to. And then the Court of Appeals' emphasis just on furthering the commercial interests of the lessee, as it saw it on the basis of the undisputed facts, that's a question of law, and that should be affirmed. In contrast, your opposing counsel says, hey, you can't determine what furthers the interest of the lessee unless you look at the lease and the feds. I mean, that's what I hear is the difference. So, is that right or wrong?
I would say not exactly, because I would agree. I think when you're talking in the business of and furthering the commercial interest, I think you have to look
the
at
test.
You have to look at the facts. And I think back to a question asked earlier about is this going to be fact specific? I think generally it's going to be, because you're going to have to take the various facts in order to figure out whether the commercial interests of the carrier are being
right.
furthered. You do have to look. The lease is among the things that you
okay.
can look at.
So you have to look at the lease to determine facts.
And
lease is a fact that plays a part.
The lease is going to indicate how the parties, described what is a business and what is a private use and what is contractually required and what is not.
Mm-hmm.
And here there is a direct correlation with the regulations, which, again, I think regardless of a lease, you would be appropriate to look at to see. The tractor can't operate if it's violating the regulations. And so it's appropriate to look at the regulations to see what they require in order to determine if the carrier's commercial interests are furthered.
So it seems as if the two of you agree about the legal test. It's just that you don't think it was applied. He thinks it was not applied properly in this case. You think it was.
Correct.
Is that the difference then?
It is. I mean, I really think, you know, and obviously that it is not only fact specific, but I do think the standard is one that we do agree on. I think it's one that's been set out certainly in the Seventh Circuit for some period of time. So I don't know what new rule of law this court would ultimately come up with, because I think it has been well established. It's just a matter of courts applying the facts.
And the interpretation of the lease is a question of law, ordinarily. Interpretation of a written document is a question of law.
Correct.
So,
And I would say to the extent the lease is also incorporating in federal regulations, that too is
question of law.
A question of law.
So So it's applying these legal principles of commercial interests shown in the lease and in the as maybe evolving in the lease and regulations and applying them to these facts. And so you come up with one answer with the Court of Appeals. The other side comes up with a different answer. Is there anything in the Court of Appeals decision you would change? Anything when you read it, you'd say, hey, sorry they said that, but I'm glad they reached the right bottom line.
You know, nothing that is standing out, Your Honor. I believe that their ruling was from generally consistent with the arguments that we had put forward, including with respect to its interpretation of the regulations and the fact that these particular parts do not fall within the regulations.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Justice Prosser.
Does your company, Great West Casualty, write non-trucking policies?
They do.
And vice versa?
Absolutely. Well, I guess I can't speak for acceptance. I'll let counsel represent what they do. Great West does issue policies for both. And, in fact, the Great West Casualty Company versus Carolina Casualty decision out of Minnesota that is cited in the materials was a circumstance where Great West had issued the non-trucking use policy.
In your non-trucking policies, would you have had the equivalent of a 14A and a 14B?
14B, I would say, is a very common provision in almost every non-trucking use policy. I mean, the wording might be slightly different, but 14B is very similar. 14A, again, our Great West was similar. It didn't talk about the operation maintenance used to carry property. It was more, I think, focused in saying that coverage would be excluded if they were the truck was being used to transport or carry property. So it is similar, and it would certainly be similar to the manner in which we believe 14A should be interpreted.
My colleague, Justice Bradley, often refers to insurance treatises and identifies a majority rule and a minority rule. I don't get the sense that that has any application here, that this is just very, very fact-specific.
It is. If you look at the cases, I mean, I think really it is the Seventh Circuit's decision in the Hartford case that really kind of set out this rule as to what in the business of means, and it really is that definition that courts from all across the country seem to apply. And again, it then comes down to a very fact-specific analysis. So I don't think there is any majority or minority rule. I think really the rule is what it was expressed by the Seventh Circuit.
But is that Hartford case applying to a 14B type provision as opposed to a 14A?
It was specifically looking at the 14B in the business of use issue. There's kind of a two-part where the court was looking at in the business of, but then it was also looking at whether the repairs met a contractual obligation under the party's lease agreement there.
Do you think that, I know there were three issues, counsel, that were set forth. Do you think they have to be analyzed separately?
With regard to the third, are you talking about whether there's coverage under Great West?
Okay. I'm saying that do we look at 13A, 14A and B together? Or do we have to separate them out in the opinion, for example?
I think you have to analyze the exclusion 14A and 14B separately. The third issue being whether there's coverage under Great West, I think that just echoes back to the 14B analysis, because if it's in the business of Taylor, coverage would be excluded under acceptance of 14B, and conversely, that would mean that Zevarino qualifies as and insured under Great West. So I think those two issues kind of mirror each other, but 14A, I believe, has to be given its own separate analysis and treated separately.
So in other words, if 14B were the analysis resulted in your favor? If that were the first question, then the third question regarding Great Western really is answered by your answer to the first question, interpreting in the business of under 14B. Is that correct?
Correct, because both policies basically use that phrase, and they kind of dovetail together, and I think the parties do agree on that point.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
In response to your question, Justice Prosser, about the non-trucking liability policies issued by Great West, there's an example at page 30 of our brief, which has the language from their exclusion 14A. And that comes out of the case of, I believe it's the it's the Great West Casualty Company versus Carolina Casualty Insurance Company case. And you can see their 14A excludes coverage in a much more limited situation. Their 14A says there's no coverage for a covered auto while used to carry property in any business. Our 14A says there's no coverage for a covered auto while being operated, maintained, or used to carry property in any business or en route to or from such business purpose. And again, that's consistent with the other case law. If he's out running an errand, he's not going to be en route to or from any kind of a business purpose. And then there would be coverage. And there's one of the cases in our reply brief, I think makes this, explains this pretty well. First of all, before I get to that case, on page 11 of our reply brief, I give a number of cases, most of which have been relied on by both parties, but almost every one of these cases finds no coverage on the non-trucking liability case or policy. And what Great West is arguing here is that, well, these all talk about major repairs or needed repairs, but they never say what it is. For all we know, those cases could be dealing with a grill because they do say things like major repairs or needed repairs.
And along that line, counsel, I feel compelled to follow up on a line of questioning that Justice Ziegler engaged in with your opposing counsel, and that is in regard to the state of repair or disrepair of the grill. And I'm looking at the appendix that you submitted at pages 277 and 278. And the part I'm going to read is brief, and I'll read it, and I'm sure you're familiar with it. And it's the part where you are questioning the driver, and you ask questions. So at the time the accident occurred, you were driving your tractor en route to getting the maintenance and repair work done on it, correct? And Mr. Zeffirino answers, I was getting repair work done on the tractor. To me, that was not a routine maintenance, but it was a repair that they had broken. They had to replace. Question, right, but you needed to get it repaired. Answer, oh, yes, I needed to get it repaired because it was already starting to fall apart and fall off on the highway. In addition, then, a little further down, page 278, page 94 of the transcript, Mr. McNee asked the following question, and following the inspection, was your truck deemed out of service in any regard, in any respect? Answer, no. Question, so that grill that had been damaged, and you were also talking about the oil filler tube, would you have been able to take a load that day without being out of service due to either the grill or the oil filler tube? Answer, yes, all of which you referred to in your original. Is there anything else in the record that gives us an idea of what in particular is meant by beginning to fall apart? I mean, one possible interpretation is that pieces are flying off. Another possible interpretation is the grill is starting to become disattached from the vehicle, but has not yet become unattached. Is there anything else in the record that gives us an indication of what the physical state of the grill was?
There is not, other than the testimony that you've just cited, where he says it was starting to fall apart and fall off on the highway. I guess that's all the further everyone went at the deposition. And he said he did need it to be repaired in order that he could perform as an owner-operator for Taylor Truck.
And we have that in comparison with the inspection done by the State Patrol trooper that said he could have taken a load if he needed.
And with the inspection report, there's, in all the pages that are in the, they're at appendix 347 to 366, nowhere in those documents is there any reference at all to any inspection of the grill or the oil filler tube. Those words never even appear in there. The only foundation that was given for that was the affidavit of Great West Counsel. And that should not have even been considered by the court when you think what it's the rule dealing with summary judgment, 802.08, I think it's subdivision 3, that says affidavits have to be based on firsthand knowledge and admissible testimony. There's never been any foundation laid for this report. Although Great West wants to rely on that, they never presented anything from the guy who did the repair or did the inspection. We don't know what happened there. We don't know if he was called off to another accident. We don't know if Zeverino maybe said, hey, I was on my way to get this thing fixed. And so the person merely overlooked it because he knows he's going to get it repaired.
Counselor, what federal regulation specifically does the broken grill violate?
49 CFR 396-3A1.
Hold on just a minute. 396-3A1?
Yeah, 0.38A1.
Okay.
That's the one that requires parts and accessories, and obviously a grill's a part or an accessory, shall be in safe and proper operating condition at all times. And if it's starting to fall apart and fall off on the highway, I don't know how it could be said that it was in safe and proper operating condition. And then 49 CFR 396.7A, that's the one that prohibits operating a vehicle in such a condition as to likely cause an accident or a breakdown of the vehicle. And these facts clearly fit into that, too. And there's one last case I just want to touch on. I know the red light's on. It's Planet versus Anglo-American Insurance Company, and you'll find that at page 10 of our reply brief. What the court there said is this. Non-trucking use insurance is a safeguard for rare situations where the tractor's owner was using the tractor for wholly personal reasons completely unrelated to business. And that's why the premiums are so low on this stuff. $25 a month for Mr. Zeverino's tractor for the non-trucking use. I think they had 64 tractors. What was being paid for the non-trucking liability was an annual premium of $19,200. What was being paid for the annual premium for the trucking liability insurance, the Great West policy, $1,032,000. And that shows the difference in premium that obviously with that high premium, you're going to get a lot more coverage and a lot broader coverage as opposed to the very, very small premium that was charged by acceptance. Thank you. If you have no further questions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much.
want to thank both counsel for their argument and their briefs. This dispute between insurance companies. And that ends our hearing in 12AP667, Brian Casey versus Ronald Smith. That's the name of the case, but the dispute is between the two companies that are involved here. The court, do we have the students coming in? No, we're going to take a short recess anyway between these two cases. Court will be back in about 5 minutes.